morning, everybody. Welcome to our share. Today's share is about, I guess the answer to the question is known before the share because we're serving donuts here. But what I would like to address today is there is a Shiloh, what appears to be a significant question, which has to do with the permissibility of eating commercially baked donuts, that is, donuts that were baked by a non-Jew. And I'd like to speak about that today. The connection to the parasha is a little bit loose, but we find yesterday in the parasha Vayera that when Avram invited the Malachim in, so he told his wife Sarah, Lushi Vasiugos, that you should knead the dough and bake the cake. So therefore, I thought that this would be a good time to speak about it. Now, in order to fully appreciate the issue here, we have to understand a couple of points as background. Okay, number one is that in the halacha, as far as what is considered bread, so bread in halacha carries with it several halachic ramifications. There is number one, bread has the mitzvah of hafrashas challah. The Torah tells us, ba'ochlechem melechem ha'aretz in parsha shlach, that when you eat from the bread of the land, so the Chazal derived from this that the mitzvah of challah only applies to something which could be considered halachically bread. Okay, then of course you have the question of what bracha do you make? So we have, in other words, amongst the various bakers, you have, let's say, bread and you have cake. So bread we say hamotzi and cake we say mizonos. So that's another area where something being classified as bread makes a difference. And third of all, we have the halacha of Birchas HaMazon, which was instituted for eating a certain amount of bread, and therefore the midrabbanan, that is midraisa savata, the Torah says that this person has to be satiated from eating it, but midrabbanan there's a certain shear, but whatever the case may be, it has to be bread. And therefore, whether something is designated as bread or not has various ramifications. Now, the reason why this is significant is because there are a lot of baked goods that are out there. We bake a lot of different things. In today's world especially, a lot of sophisticated things come up. And you have, obviously, cake and cookies have always been there. But you have croissants and you have what's called today, which we spoke about once, the mizonos bread. All kinds of issues that come up. And what is considered bread and what is not. So that's just something that there's a whole siman Shulchan Aruch. It's not one of the easier ones, that goes at length in discussing what constitutes bread and what doesn't. Over the years, we've spoken about pasabah bekisnin, a certain type of bread, which technically the types of cakes that we have, which on the one hand are considered bread, on the other hand are not, because of the way that, on the one hand, they're baked and they're made from flour. The dough is essentially flour and water. On the other hand, they're not used in the same way that bread is. Nobody makes a sandwich with two pieces of cake and puts something in between. Nobody does that, right? So therefore, we have there are different classifications in halacha, and it's important to know where something falls. Now, another area which is relevant to this discussion is something which is discussed in the Mishnah Maseches Avodah Zarah that we have here on the sheet on page 1. Okay, so the Mishnah tells us that Eilu Dvarim Shalovde Kochavim, we spoke about this in the past, but this is important to review at this time. Eilu Dvarim, the following are items, Shalovde Kochavim, I'm reading from the Mishnah, which is halfway down the page. Okay, asurin ve'ein asurin iser hana. The following things were declared by the rabbis to be prohibited, but they are not asur b'hana. They're not prohibited to derive benefit from, but rather it's only that you can't eat them. And what are they? So the first one on the list, cholav shecholvu ovid kochavim ve'ein yisrael roehu. The first thing is milk that was milked by a goy, and there was no Jew watching. Right, this is the issue of Chol Yisroel, which we spoke about years ago. And again, just to reiterate, for those who weren't here then, it's just important to realize this, that the prohibition of Chol Yisroel, the issue of Chol Yisroel, the reason why people drink what is specifically labeled as Chol Yisroel, is because of this decree that the rabbis made. Now, the decree was made, the specific way this decree was formulated was that it has to be milked in the presence of a Jew. In other words, it's not good enough to say, well, I know that it wasn't milk from a pig. Pig's milk is not kosher. The milk of any non-kosher animal is not kosher. But you say, well, but I know it's kosher. I know it wasn't a pig. But the specific way this was formulated was that it has to be milked in the presence of a Jew in order for it to be permissible. That's what gives rise to the challenge of Chol Yisroel. And we mentioned in the past, Moshe Feinstein had the famous psak, which many, many, many people go by today, where he said that based on certain halachic reasoning, that even the non-Chol Yisroel milk that we have could be considered Chol Yisroel, in his view, because of the fact that it's a non-sahadi, because even though you don't have actually people standing there and watching, but something, there's a concept in halacha that if something is absolutely, without any question, known to be true, then it's as if it was witnessed. And therefore, since he argued that since in America, a company that would sell pig's milk or any other non-kosher animal's milk would lose its license, so therefore it's a non-sahadi that it was not, that the milk in the public's container is milk from a cow, and therefore that would be considered Chol Yisroel. That's what he said. And therefore, we all drink Chol Yisroel, according to him, right? Just that the non, quote-unquote, Chol Yisroel milk is also Chol Yisroel. That's what he said. It was challenged. We discussed this in the past. It was challenged initially by people who brought proofs that they would not lose the license. It would only be a fine. And then he said, well, if for a steep fine, it would also be a non-Sahadi. And then they came back and showed that it wouldn't be a steep fine. But whatever the case may be, at the end of the day, he never backed down from it. And that's the way it is. And thus we have, this is the din of Chol Yisroel. It's not what I wanted to speak about. Okay, next. But you can't pass this by without addressing it. Okay, the next thing is what we are interested in, v'hapas. The second thing is that the rabbis decree that you cannot eat the bread baked by a non-Jew. Now, we have to understand this because in today's world, it's difficult, it's confusing. The bread that's baked by a non-Jew, in today's world, you could not eat without a hechsher because who knows what they put into it. You know, there could be all kinds of ingredients that are not kosher. But in the good old days, bread was just flour and water and then maybe some eggs were put into it. And therefore, there was no question about the kashrus. It was definitely kosher. The question just, so that being the case, so then even if a non-Jew baked it, it should be permissible. But nevertheless, the rabbis here decreed that you're not allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to eat the bread of a non-Jew. The reason for this, the Gemara explains later, is because of the fact that they were concerned that since bread is the most basic food, or at least it used to be, the most basic part of a person's meal. So therefore, you eat bread, people eat bread together with, and you come to eat the bread together. You'll sit down with your next door neighbor who's a goy, and you'll sit down to have a meal. And while you're having this meal, which is essentially going to be bread, so then he has a son and you have a daughter, and before you know it, you can get into trouble. So therefore, because of this was a concern apparently at one time, right, it may sound a little far-fetched to us, but apparently they made a gzera. There must have been a reason for it. So there was always, it's interesting that there was, in many periods of Jewish history, there was a concern about intermarriage. You know, today, obviously, it's in America, it's out of control in a certain sense, but the issue always existed. So therefore, the Rabbanan made a decree. They made a number of decrees to prevent that. So that's bread. Okay, then we find later, if you skip down a line, it says v'hashlokos. Shlokos at the end of the next line means cooked food. And this is what's referred to in the modern jargon as bishul akum. Bishul akum means food that was cooked by a non-Jew. Okay, again, we're not discussing here the kashrus. It's very important to realize this. We have an issue of pas Yisrael, right, because we just said that bread that was baked by a non-Jew is not acceptable. Therefore, the only bread that would be acceptable that you could eat would be pas Yisroel, bread that was baked by a Jew. So too, food that was cooked by a non-Jew you cannot eat unless it was cooked by a Jew, bishul Yisroel. So we have pas Yisroel, bishul Yisroel. Now, just to make this perfectly clear, these takonas, these policies that the rabbis made had nothing to do with kashrus. Had absolutely nothing to do with kashrus. If you thought the food wasn't kosher, of course you couldn't eat it. There's no question that you can't eat food that might not be kosher. The issue here is if you know for sure that the food is kosher. There's no question that this bread is kosher is absolutely no question. Well, there's absolutely no question that this was baked, that this food was cooked by a non-Jew, but I know it's kosher because the non-Jew baked it in my house. Right? Common question today. I have a maid or a cleaning lady, whatever it is, and in today's world, where very commonly both the husband and the wife work, so the wife goes off to work, and she's not going to come home till close to supper time, close to dinner time, so what are they going to do? So she says to the non-Jewish maid, please put up supper. Please cook, in some cases, please cook supper. Okay, now that would be, now in such a situation, let's just say for a minute that you're sure that she didn't, all the food in your house is kosher and she brings nothing in from the outside. Let's just say you know that, right? So you still couldn't eat it according to this, because that's not Bishul Yisrael. It has to be cooked by a Jew. And the same, so again, so we have the two policies, it's just important to reiterate, because today, none of these things, especially when it comes to the bread of a non-Jew, nobody would dream to walk into a non-Jewish bakery and just order the bread and start eating it, because you would say that, well, who knows what they put in there, right? But in the old days, and not that long ago, it was a common minhag, for example, that after Pesach, I mean, my father, Shlomo Buell, always tells me that after Pesach, where did you get bread from? Where did you get bread? So you and in those days, so today, you have, there's no issue, because today the bread in the supermarkets is laden with preservatives, so therefore it could last probably till next Pesach, right? The bread. So therefore you can go in after Pesach and get bread from a non-Jewish guy that was sitting there from before Pesach with no you on it, says no problem. But in the old days, they didn't have that. So what do you eat after Pesach? The Jewish baker is going to take him at least a day to get up and running. And as far as everybody else is concerned, bread was the main part of what people ate. It's not like today that Baruch Hashem, we have affluence and we have so much other food to eat. Bread was an essential thing. So what did you do? So you went to the non-kosher bakery and you got bread. That was commonly done, right? The thing is, but you'll say, but oh my gosh, how could you do that? It says here that it has to be Pas Yisrael, that it has to be baked by a Jew. Okay, so some of the things which I'm saying now is just a review, and some of them are very well known, but it needs to be spoken out in order to appreciate this. So the Gemara tells us this is a big discussion in the Yerushalmi. Also, we find this, that when they made the decree against bread, there was a major uproar in Klal Yisrael, because people said, what are you doing? We can't survive like this. Because there are a lot of places, a lot of communities did not have a kosher bakery, and therefore they had to buy from the non-Jew. And now what are we going to do? If you say we can't eat bread, there's nothing for us to eat. We Pesach the whole year. There's nothing for us to eat. What do we have? And it's not, again, it's not like today where Baruch Hashem, we have so much affluence, relatively speaking, that we could go the whole week without eating a piece of bread. Everyone's on diets, all kinds of things, gluten-free, whatever it is. We go without eating bread and it's no problem. But it didn't used to be that way. So the Chazal say, so it says, brought, there's a discussion, the Yerushalmi, and basically what came out of it was that the decree was rolled back almost completely, but not totally. The decree was rolled back in the following way. They said that, okay, that we still don't want you eating bread that was baked by a non-Jew, but that's only if it was private, only if he baked it in his house. But if it's commercially baked, if it's baked for sale, not for his own personal usage, then we'll allow it. Why should that be? So since the explanation would be, because we said a moment ago that the whole thing that they were concerned about, the reason why this decree was made in the first place was because of the concern of intermarriage, because of the concern that you're going to sit down and eat with this fellow, and he baked it in his house, in his kitchen, so he'll invite you over, and you'll sit down, you'll eat with him. So obviously, if it's baked commercially, you don't have that concern, because the fellow who's selling it couldn't care less who buys it. As long as somebody buys it, he doesn't care who it is. There's nothing personal about that. So this is what's called pas palter. The pas palter, the word palter, it means a baker, a commercial baker, and bread that was made by a commercial baker, the rabbis in the end permitted. So therefore, if you have today, just playing this out into our modern world, so if you go into the Publix and you see that they sell bread, Arnold's bread, Arnold may be a Jewish name, I don't know if it is or it isn't, but it doesn't matter, because the fact of the matter is that as long as it has OU on it, and it's kosher, so then that's permissible to be eaten, because you say, but maybe it was Goyim who baked it. It doesn't matter according to this because it's palter. They didn't bake it for the purpose of socializing. They baked it for the purpose of a major business, and they sell all over the East Coast, and therefore that's what they're interested in and nothing else. And therefore that would be mutter. And the same would be true, the issue of pas, as I said at the outset, what is classified as bread ends up including a lot of things more than just bread. And for this purpose, it would also include cake and cookies and pretzels, things like that, would all be considered pas technically, as far as this halacha is concerned. And therefore, again, the fact that you could eat Entenmann's donuts or Drake's or whatever, and this one's pretzels, or Snyder's pretzels, right, is all because of the fact that we rely on this kula of pas palter. Now, you'll say, if that's the case, so then why is there ever an issue of Bishul Yisrael? How come you go in stores or you go in certain bakeries and they have a big sign, we only sell Bishul Yisrael? So the reason for this is because the question came up amongst the poskim that when the rabbis made this leniency that you're allowed to buy commercially baked goods, was that only done out of necessity? Meaning only if you live in a place where you can't get kosher, where you can't get from a Jew. That's when they made the leniency. Or did they make the leniency across the board? Did they make it that makes no difference? Whatever it is, it's mutter. So this is the question that we had. This is a big argument in the Ramban, the Shach, in Yeridea, have an argument about this point. And therefore, even though the prevailing minhag is that we are lenient and we buy it, even though in our towns where we live, Baruch Hashem, you could get from a kosher bakery. But nevertheless, most people are lenient. The ones who are not, it's not without reason. In other words, there are people who feel that why should you get involved in a machlokas if you could avoid it? So therefore, they will eat only the Bishul Yisroel. It's not mishigas. It's not like some frumkeit that from left field. No, this is it definitely has a basis. Yes.
Does that apply also since the premise is the same to milk also then?
So to milk is a question. So by milk it's a little different because, as I said, according to Rav Moshe, he held that the milk, the public's milk, is really Chol Yisrael. He held that it really is. Now there are those people who say, and this is even printed in one of the Art Scroll Halacha books, where amazing, the person who wrote, it's a very well received sefer and very well written, but he writes there that he is confident that Rav Moshe Feinstein only said it because at that time, Chol Yisrael was not nearly as available as it is today. And he writes in the footnotes, which is really amazing, and even though I know that there are those close to him who disagree with this, but that's just whatever. He gives some reason, which isn't really so necessarily so solid, that why they say that. But the people today are Machmer and Chol Yisrael. It's also not without reason. There's all these things, the Chol Yisrael, because they'll say, what are you relying on? You're relying on Heterim. Okay, on the other hand, the person who said it with great conviction, and he had proofs that he was right. So, okay, it's up, that's up to every person. So people are machmir on these things, with the Chol Yisrael.
He didn't call it a Heter, though.
So they say, I never saw this, I don't know them so well, but they say that the members of his family to this day eat non-Chol Yisrael things. But on the other hand, it became much more accepted to eat Chol Yisrael, in New York area, it's almost, totally accepted, because it's so commonly available. Okay, I don't know. I shouldn't say totally accepted, but it's accepted on a very, very high level. Here in Miami, maybe it's a little different. It's hard to know. But the bottom line is that this is the issue with the Chol Yisrael, and this is the issue with the Bishul Yisrael. Because the Bishul Yisrael is because there are people who say, what are you eating Arnold's bread? Go to the kosher bakery. You can get the kosher, because you can go to the kosher bakery. So some people say, I don't want to say Lashon Hara, but the Arnold's bread tastes better. Okay, is that true? Okay, who says that's true? Right, and then you have so you'll say, yeah, but the cookies taste better. In other words, the Entenmann's or the Drake's or whatever, Keebler, whatever, Oreo, and the Bisco, the cookies, they all taste better. They all taste better than the okay, fine. But I'm just saying, this is where the issue lies. It's not, if a person relies on the lenient opinion, it's definitely accepted. There's no question about it. On the other hand, the person who wanted to be strict in this area is not without good reason. Yeah.
You don't mean Bishul across the board.
I'm talking about pas. Pas, we're talking about. Pas, no, not get the bishop. Now, right, that's as far as pas, yes.
There's no heter or explanation at all for relying on the pas, non-Yisrael, when there's a tremendous price difference?
No, so that's also, in other words, see, because the original heter was given out of great need, so that's what created the machlokas. In other words, the Shach and the Ramah are arguing about the fact, well, what's the great need now? You can get it. So some people say the price might be considered a great need. Okay. Some people say the fact that you can that Publix is open until 11 o'clock at night and the kosher stores are closed much earlier and I can only do my shopping late at night because I work during the day, that's a great need. Some people say that the taste is a great need. Okay, and some people say that none of that really makes much of a difference, and, you know, come on, like, what do you need this for? And just go get the Jewish stuff. So there you have it, okay? So the Chassidim, it happens to be a very machmer in this area, and probably more so than anybody, and therefore they are very, you know, insistent on the Bishul Yisrael. On the Pas Yisrael, excuse me. Okay, yeah.
Maybe you already covered this, but the Pas, not Yisrael, but yeah. That has
an OU on. Yes. Because the past is the let's say Arnold's bread. Let's just say for a minute, Mr. Arnold is not Jewish.
Is that
palter? Okay, huh?
That's what you're calling palter.
Palter. Yeah. Palter. Yes. Palter. Palter means it was commercially baked. In other words, he didn't make it to invite you over for supper because he likes you. He made it to sell. It's his business. Okay. So the OU is telling you that the ingredients are kosher. That's what they're telling you. But they're not telling you this. They're not telling you that in order that it shouldn't be that it shouldn't be the bread of a non-Jew, it has to be baked by a Jew. They're not. The OU is not saying that. They're absolutely not saying that.
They don't like the ovens.
They don't like the ovens and lighting the, you know, it's tricky, you know, when it comes to, right, they're saying that we don't do that. The only thing we're telling you is that all the ingredients are kosher. All the ingredients are kosher, no problem. Now, you want to decide for yourself whether you want to align, that's up to you. But in case you want, again, I'm not trying to, you know, create an issue here. It's widely accepted to be lenient. It's widely accepted. But there is somewhat of an issue. Yeah, yeah.
The basis that all the ingredients are kosher, a list that they get from the manufacturer, or is that...
They checked it out. They went down and checked it out. They have people standing there. No, that's thorough. The hashgacha is thorough. There's no question. They have people there and watching and so forth. But for whatever reason, they're not able to start the fire. It's true what you're saying. In other words, one of the leniencies that the rabbis made is that it doesn't have to be considered bishul. To be considered pas Yisrael, does not have to be baked from start to finish. And even if a Jew just lit the oven, that would be good enough. That these are all in, but a lot of times even those things you don't have. You don't have even that. Okay, that's as far as I know, that's the case with all of these products. You know, the Keebler's cookies I has also OU. I don't think that they turn on the oven.
So the distinction with OU milk is that because it's because of the nature of the process and the government oversight.
So therefore, yeah, but it begins with what the takana was in the first place. In other words, the concern with the milk is a little different, a little bit of a curveball, because it's not just that I know it's not pig's milk. That's not good enough. It has to be that a Jew saw it. That's the way they made the gzera. So because they made it that way, that created, in a certain sense, a greater challenge. It's harder to get around that than it is to, so to speak, get around these other things. Okay, now getting to Bishul, and then we come back to our... We'll see how it's relevant in our discussion. So if you turn over the page to page 2, so Bishul Akum, food that was cooked by a non-Jew, is not acceptable either. Again, even if you know 100% that all the ingredients are kosher. In other words, the discussion has nothing to do with a concern of kashrus. If you don't think it's kosher, you don't need the Rabbanan to say you can't eat it. It's pasha, you can't eat it. Right, the issue over here is that you think I know it's all kosher. I know all the ingredients are kosher, but it was cooked by a non-Jew. Now, this today, like I said, this is one of the biggest issues that we have today in kashrus in the kosher home, because of the fact that so many people work and they work and they leave the non-Jew at home, and it creates other issues we've discussed in the past. But put up, you know, cook supper. cook supper, put up the food, heat up the food or cook the food in some cases. So how do we handle this? So if you look here, the Gemara on the Flamet Chesna of Zara says the following. The Gemara says that when the rabbis made this decree, they built in two outs. There were two exceptions to this decree. The Gemara says, Aram Shmuel Barav Yisrael Amarav, Ko Hanechal Kamosha Hu Chai, anything that can be eaten raw, any item that can be eaten raw, Ein Bo Mishum Bishul Evde Kachavim, would not be a problem of Bishul Akum, would not be a problem. If you could eat it raw, then even if a guy cooked it and you wanted it cooked, but nevertheless, that they did not include in the decree, presumably because the benefit that you're getting is minimal. So they didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't put that into the grouping. Yeah, yes.
What about raw fish?
So, okay, so I'm not so good in the kitchen, but any item that can be eaten raw, that's the rule. Any item, let's say water, right? Cooked water, right? So the water, you could drink water, obviously, without it being cooked. So therefore, if a guy cooked up water for you, there's no problem. If a guy cooked a tomato for you or something like that, it could be eaten raw, no problem. There's no concern of Bishul Akum. Yes.
How about coffee or tea?
Coffee or tea is for the same reason, but coffee or tea is for a different reason also. The reason why they're lenient about coffee, you'll say, you can't eat the coffee raw, that's what you're asking, right? The coffee could not be eaten raw, but the difference is that you're not really eating the coffee. By coffee, it's what's called zeya. What you're eating is what comes, halachically, forgive me for putting it this way, but it's considered like the sweat of the product. In other words, they poured water over the beans, and this is what you got. You're not eating the cooked beans. If you were eating the cooked coffee beans, it would be a shiloh. But because you're not eating the cooked beans, you're just drinking water that was poured over those things, so it's sort of a gray area, so that was considered acceptable. The postum say this, that's considered acceptable also. So therefore... Say again.
Besides that, coffee is
pukuach nefesh. Right, pukuach nefesh, right. As we all know. Right.
What about popcorn?
Popcorn, I'll get to in a second. Yeah. So that you have to know if it was added to. But in other words, the simplest case is any item that could be eaten raw. Okay, a fruit, a vegetable, a baked apple. Let's say it was cooked, whatever it may be. You could eat the apple without that. So even though you like it this way, it doesn't matter. It's okay.
It would have to be shtakor kol yisra outside of America.
Coffee are outside of America. Yeah, it's a different discussion. But coffee outside of America, you probably do. You probably do have to be concerned. Yeah. Yeah, well, a lot of these things, and that's a different discussion. You go fly, overseas. A lot of these things come up that you have to really think about. But anyway, so that's one leniency. Okay, the second leniency is the Gemara says two lines further down, five lines from the top. The Gemara says, Then they added a second version, which in the halacha we hold of both of these things, which is that another exclusion to the rule of the prohibition of Bishul Akum is food that is not prestigious. Food that is not prestigious, how do you define that? So in the rabbi's jargon, it was that it's not olal shulchan malachim, that it would not be put on a royal table, would not be placed on the royal table to eat. Okay, so the question was asked about popcorn, right? Clearly, popcorn is not included in that. So therefore, if you had, assuming you knew that the ingredients were kosher, there was a guy selling fresh popcorn, and you knew that he had a kosher oil, and let's say whatever else it may be, there's no problem. Okay, so this is the sex. So there are two exclusions. The two exclusions are, and this is very important for what we're going to eventually get to. Okay, the two exclusions are: it has to be something that cannot be eaten raw, and it has to be something that's prestigious. Now, in this second category, there's a great deal of discussion because of the fact that today, we especially in America, we don't have royalty, and therefore, in general, we're a little bit more relaxed about how we eat and so forth. And the question is, does the Gemara mean literally that it has to be served to a king? In other words, President Obama and Queen Elizabeth probably have some discrepancy on what they would consider suitable to serve. In other words, not what the president eats in his private quarters, but when they have a state dinner, so what would they serve? Right? So let's just say the king of a country came to the White House and they have a state dinner. So what would he put out there? So it sounds like anything that would not qualify, certain things they wouldn't put out there. Right? Just to take an example, okay, potato chips. Potato chips are, to the best of my knowledge, the Wise potato chips and Lay's potato chips are totally bishlakum. Right? There's not like the OU is there lighting anything or anything like that. Right? So why do we eat how do we eat potato chips? Because it rely on the fact that would not be served at such a dinner. You wouldn't serve it. Now it's tricky for a few reasons. It's tricky because first of all, but there are other types of potatoes that they would. Right? Now they would serve the mashed potatoes, they would serve possibly some fancy baked potato. They just won't serve the potato in this form. So that's, you know, but that's considered, okay, that's considered enough to say that it's not all al shulchan malachim. But then you have the question of how far, what does it take? In other words, so even at, let's say, a simcha, okay, a person makes, we're not, you know, of course, Klal Yisrael, we're all, you know, mamlechus kohanim, the Torah says, so we're all royalty, but practically speaking, a person makes a wedding or a bar mitzvah or something like that, so you're not going to put out potato chips for people to eat, right? Because it's a bizayon. It's not, even though people might like it when they're waiting, you know, endlessly for the chosen kala to come in. It might not be bad to have some potato chips to munch on, right? But nevertheless, it's not put out. Why not? Because it's not considered appropriate, right? But on the other hand, there are, you know, nowadays there are other types of trips that have made it more. You know, the dips have become much more popular. So it's a very difficult area to determine, you know, what really is considered ain ol al shulchan malachim. Very difficult, and all the modern day kashrus agencies have to deal with this question, because this comes up a lot. Because very often in the hechsherim of commercial companies, you know, you're going out to whether it's the OU or any of the others that are going into these large corporations, large factories. So they don't want any rabbis tinkering with the machinery. You know, it's enough that they'll let them stand and watch, but, you know, they're not, you're going to go turn on the machine, you're going to go turn on the fire, they're not interested. So therefore, in this area, you have a great deal of concern with products, and what used to be, it has to be reevaluated every so often, because the style of eating changes, and in general, the world today has moved away, has drifted away from formality, and things largely, many more things have become informal. You know, the way people dress when they go to work, and all kinds of things, and it could be it's carried over into these areas too. In other words, a little bit not so, you know, we're not such sticklers when it comes to food, even at a grand banquet. So, okay, so these are the issues when we deal with Bishul Akum. Okay, there are a lot more halachas involved in this, but this is the basic ground rules. Okay, now we come to our topic today: Krispy Kreme donuts or Dunkin' Donuts. Okay, so now what goes on in these places? So the Dunkin' Donuts we have in Hollywood, kosher Dunkin' Donuts, and you have here in the neighborhood the Krispy Kreme. Okay, and everybody goes in there. I myself was just the other day in Dunkin' Donuts. Right, you go in there and wonderful. You eat it. Now the question is, what exactly goes on in these places? So they both have hechsherim, the same hechsher ORB in both places, right? But what does that mean? The ORB rabbi goes in and lights the fire? So as far as I know, the answer to that is no. He does not light the fire in either of these establishments. Okay? Now, that being the case, so why is it so simple that we're allowed to eat it? So you'll say, well, because he's telling you it's kosher. Okay, fine. But that's as far as kashrus. We're dealing now with the different question of that there were gezeiros, there were decrees that the rabbis made, even beyond the kashrus. Okay, so the gut reaction that people have is, well, it's like all the other bread. You know, okay, it's palter, right? The people in Dunkin' Donuts, it's not even the people selling, aren't even the owners, right? So it's v'chol, nothing to talk about. Right, and you know, it's commercial bread, is acceptable, you know, when, like I say, even by most people, even if the Bishul Yisrael is available, the Pas Yisrael is available, they'll still eat it. Okay, but the question is, what is a donut considered in halacha? What is a donut considered? Is it considered a pas, or is it considered a bishul? Okay, now what's the question? Why is that? So the reason is because anybody knows how they make donuts. How do you make donuts? You take the dough. You start out with the dough, kneading the dough the same way you would make bread or cake or anything like that. But then you dunk it into a deep fryer. These things are all fried. They don't go into an oven. They don't put the donuts in an oven. They're fried in water, or in oil. They're fried in oil, and as such, the simple gut feeling would be that it should not be considered like pas, but it should be considered like bishul. Now, if it's considered like bishul, life gets more complicated, because when it comes to pas, when it comes to the issue of baked goods, so there, the leniency is more comprehensive. The leniency is that if it was done commercially, there's no problem, okay? Because the whole issue is that you'll come to socialize, it was done commercially, there's no problem. But when it comes to cooked food, there's different criteria. When it comes to cooked food, there is no outright leniency like that. We don't say bishul, palter, or whatever word you would use, right? The bishul of a non-Jewish cook commercially is mutter. We don't say that. We the only leniencies we have are the two leniencies that we saw in the Gemara, which is brought in Shulchan Aruch. Namely, either it's eaten raw, which donuts aren't, or it's not prestigious. Okay? So it's not prestigious. So that's the one that we're gonna have to maybe rely on. In other words, because the other one you don't have, right? You can't tell me you can eat a raw. You obviously can't eat a raw. So, and the fact that it's commercially done is also no good. If it's considered a cooked item and not bread. So in other words, if you're looking, if you want to create a strategy, you're looking for a heter, right? So I'm not supposed to go looking for a heter, but if you're the rabbi in the community and you're getting pressure, come on, why don't we get Dunkin' Donuts over here? Why don't we get Krispy Kreme? Right? You say, but in your mind, you start thinking, well, but who says you could do that? Right? So how are you going to approach this? So the two avenues to pursue would be, A, maybe we can consider it bread. And if we can consider it bread, then we're in the clear. Because if it's bread, then it's commercial, and then you're okay. Right? On the other hand, if you're not going that route, then the other route you're going to have to go is to say that it's not prestigious. So we'll have to see whether that's true or not. Okay, so this brings us to page 3. So the Shulchan Aruch says here, Simen Kuf Samech Ches, which is the one Simen Shulchan Aruch which deals with what's considered bread halachically. So the Shulchan Aruch says as follows in Sif Yud Gimel. The Shulchan Aruch brings a big machlokas in the Rishonim, and he says like this: Afilu, this is 5 lines from the top. Afilu Davar Shebliloso. I'll skip the parentheses for the moment. Shebliloso Ova. Right, so one of the criteria for what's considered bread and what's not in halacha is how thick the batter is. In other words, if the batter is a thick batter, it's more likely to be classified as bread. Okay. However, if it's a loose batter, like pancakes, for example, you can just pour it. Right. So then it's generally speaking, it would not be considered bread under any classification. Okay. But a donut is a thick batter. Right, so says the Shulchan Aruch that even if it's a thick batter, in bishla otugna, if the person fried it, there are different ways of doing it. If the person took it and fried it, ein mevarich aleh hamotzi, then you would not say the bracha of hamotzi. Afiul sheyesh aleh turaisa denama. Turaisa denama is an Aramaic expression which in Hebrew is called toar lechem. Toar lechem means it has the appearance of bread. In other words, there are certain things that have the appearance of bread, right? It's originally flour and water, and it still, even afterwards, has the fluffy, you know, general appearance of bread. A cake would be that way, cookies would be that way, as opposed to, let's say, spaghetti. right? The spaghetti or things like that, which is cut into very, very small pieces, and the strings or whatever, that does not have the appearance of bread. But something which does, that's also a criteria that goes into determining how you classify it, says the Shulchan Aruch first opinion, that even if it has the thick dough, and even if it has the appearance of bread, if it was fried, then you don't say hamotzi, afilu nischayva b'chala, and even if you had to separate chala originally, which is I don't want to get into, but might be a slightly different criteria, de birchas hamotzi eino holech, and here we turn the page, ela achar shas afir, because the bracha of hamotzi is determined by when you bake it, meaning that if you bake it, if you stick it into the oven, that's called bread. And therefore, only bread or cake, cookies would be considered that. But if it's roasted and it's dunked into oil in a deep fryer, or it's boiled or whatever it may be, boiled in water, right? That would not be like a knedlach, right? Would be an example of that. So that would not be considered. That would not be considered bread. Okay. It's for this reason, by the way, that a person who eats gebrucht on Pesach. Right, so we know there's a halacha on Erev Pesach. You're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. Right, so comes Erev Pesach after the time that you can no longer eat chametz and you're hungry. What are you going to eat? So you need something that's going to hold you over. So some people don't eat knedel of matzah balls on Pesach at all because they don't eat gebrucht. We spoke about that once. But if assuming you do, so then you'd be allowed to eat knedel on Erev Pesach. Right? Why is that? You say, what do you mean? But this is crushed matzah, right? So here, the fact that ultimately it was boiled again, and there is even more of a chiddush because it was originally baked as matzah. But the fact of the matter is that now that you crushed it up and you made it into a boiled item, so therefore it's not considered bread at all. It's not considered matzah. But anyway, returning to this is the first opinion. Right, that something which is fried automatically goes out of the classification of bread. Okay, if that's the case, Dunkin' Donuts and Krispy Kreme are on the alert. Okay, because we cannot just simply say, well, it's commercial and it's mutter. The commercial, the heter of it being commercial, only helps if it's bread. But we just said that something that's boiled or fried is not considered bread. That's the first opinion. Okay, now, v'yesh cholkim. So now we have the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam that he came along and disagrees, and he says, v'omrim, d'kol shetchilas he'isa ova, he says, it doesn't go by when it's baked. It goes by how the dough is made. If the dough is made in a thick consistency, so then, afilu richa achach b'mayim, even if he then immersed it in water, v'asas of gunim, which is what the word we use today for donuts, I don't know if exactly what he meant, but the similar type item, right? Even if he made it into a donut, ubishlo b'mayim o togna b'shemen, mevarech oleh hamotzi. Rabbeinu Tam said that, in my opinion, you would still say hamotzi, because we don't go by when it's baked. We go by how it was made in the outset. And the outset, when you make a donut, and you look at the person who's preparing the dough, it's very similar to the way you prepare cake and cookies. And all those things are considered bread, in a certain sense, right? They're considered bread. That's why we mentioned, that's why you're allowed to buy them in Publix. Okay, the general, you don't say hamotzi on them, but they're in the general classification of bread, right? So too here. So he says, mevarech le hamotzi, there you have it. So now, according to this opinion, Dunkin' Donuts is looking pretty good. Okay, so according to the first opinion, Rabbeinu Yonah, so that, the first opinion, Shulchan Aruch, so that is no good. Then it's challenging. According to the second opinion, we're pretty much in the clear. So which way do we paskin? So we have here in the parentheses a very mysterious statement. V'nagu l'hakil. The minig is to be lenient. What does it mean to be lenient? So the Mishnah Berurah says on the bottom, Ayin Dalet, the Mishnah Berurah says, Pirish kesvara harishona, that we're lenient like the first opinion, the Ein Tzarech Levarech Hamotzi, the Gimel Brachas. Meaning that, what's the Chumrah over here? So the Chumrah would be that if you consider it bread, if you consider donuts to be bread, so then you're going to have to bench, and then you're going to have to say Hamotzi, right? You have to wash until Sidayim and say Hamotzi. So those are all stricter than if it would be considered not bread, right? So therefore, it says the Ramah that the minig is, in other words, it's not clear cut. It's not clear cut. There was no absolute hachra. There was no, like, bottom line, final decision. But the minig became to be lenient. Okay, now, how does that apply for us? So it's a little unclear. So the Shulchan Aruch then continues and says, V'yarishamayim yasi deshneyem. So he says that there's another area where this would come up, would be if you ate this as dessert in a meal, so would you have to make a bracha, or is it covered by hamotzi? So anything that could potentially be considered hamotzi, we don't make a bracha on at the end of a meal. That's why if you have cake for dessert, you don't have to say a bracha on it. Because even though cake, we say mizonos, but if you ate enough of it, you would say hamotzi, whatever. So that's what we do. So it says the Shulchan Aruch, but here it's unclear. So if you want to eat donuts for dessert, you should really only do it in a meal that you ate bread for, because it could be that it's considered bread. Okay, now, truth be told, this is not relevant to us, because that's only if it was could be construed as bread beyond any question. But the way we have the donuts, since it's clearly Passover B'Kisnin, because the donuts you mix in a lot of sugar and so forth, so therefore, this stringency you wouldn't have. As according to what the Shulchan Aruch is saying, you could only eat a donut in a meal that you had bread. Imagine that. In other words, you couldn't have one now, according to the Shulchan Aruch, because you need bread. So maybe you have to say hamotzi, but we're not sure. So how do you do that? So that doesn't apply. That doesn't apply. But what does apply is the question. So the Ramah said that it says in Nagul Lahakil that the custom is to be lenient. So how does that play out when it comes to this? Yeah, go ahead.
Doesn't the Ramah also make a chiluk for Ashkenazim at least, but it's only if it looks like bread?
Yeah, so donuts look like bread. According to the classification, looking like bread doesn't mean that it appears like a loaf of bread in the package. It means that it has a similar consistency to bread. Right, donuts would be considered that. So the question is, so what do we do? So Rav Avadia Yosef in the Chavad Das, and it's one of the Svarim of Tshuvas that he wrote, he quotes from the Ramah says in Yeridaya, when it comes to the laws of Bishul Aklam, the Ramah says that in any case of doubt, you could be lenient. That since it's a din derabanan, since the whole Bishul Aklam is a din derabanan, it's not a Torah restriction, it's a rabbinic one, so therefore, in case of doubt, safek lahakel. So he wanted to say that here, since you have two opinions in the Rishonim, and it's not clear what the halach is. There's no clear-cut decision what the halach is. So therefore, he argued that that's also a suffix. So if it's a suffix, suffix will huckle. And therefore, you don't have to consider it. When it comes to the donuts by us, the chumrah would be to consider it cooked. The lenient opinion would be considered bread, right? Because you could have the best of both worlds. It's bread, but you don't have to say hamotzi on it. So that's it. But you have all the benefits of the fact that it was commercially baked. Right, so therefore, he said that you could rely on that lakula. That's what he said. However, this is highly debated by others at that time who did not go for that. Even amongst the Sfaradim, there were many Sfaradim poskim who didn't. They said that's not what it means. Suffolk lahakel. You know, here there are two opinions, and the question is which opinion is embraced. So whichever opinion is the minhag olam, that's the opinion. Okay, so that being the case, so then it wouldn't be so simple. Because if, in other words, what comes out over here is that the first opinion that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch is that a donut, because it's fried, cannot be considered bread. And if it can't be considered bread, it is removed from the leniency of commercial baked goods, and it goes into the category of cooked food, cooked by a non-guy, for which the only leniencies would be if either it could be eaten raw, which it cannot, or if it's not ol al shulchan malach. So in the OU manual on Bishul Aklam, so they have there the Bible. It says they have a quote from Rabbi Yisrael Belsky, that Tzal, just recently passed away, who was the senior posek for the OU for many, many years. He said that in his opinion, a donut is not ol al shulchan malachim. That a donut is not prestigious. And therefore, if they had a state dinner in the White House, they would not put it out. It's just not good enough. Even if they'll serve cake, but they're not going to put out donuts. Donuts is like a fun food. You know, that's what we would call it. You know, it's like a person eats a donut that has a smile on his face, right? It's just like ice cream. You know, so certain things put a smile on your face. When you sit down to eat a piece of cake, you don't have that same reaction, right? So in other words, not that that's the criteria, I'm making that up, but I'm just saying that. In other words, the point is that it's not like a serious type of prestigious thing that a guest of honor comes, oh, here, have a donut. Now, maybe if you came for breakfast, you know, would be different. But the halacha goes by at a feast, at a prestigious feast. So that's what people rely on. This is what people rely on. Now, you know, you could start saying, yeah, but if you go, let's say, to a wedding on Hanukkah, right? So it could be that they will put out the sufganiyot, you know, because that's the great minhag of Hanukkah. To have the anything that has to do with oil, right? There's a minhag to eat on Hanukkah, so therefore the jelly donuts. I don't know what the jelly, but that got into it. But the idea of eating a donut that's cooked in oil, that's fried in oil. So that's a great minhag, and maybe they would serve that on Hanukkah. Okay, but apparently that's not enough to sway the pendulum here. In other words, what it really comes down to is it at a, typically speaking, is this put out at a prestigious feast or not? So now there are people that disagree. There are people that disagree, and there are Rabbanim who today disagree with this and say that no, you shouldn't eat it. You shouldn't eat it because of the fact that they make donuts very nicely. And the standards have dropped. It's not like it used to be. People aren't, you know, they're not the same, high, strict standards. And therefore, it could be that, you never know, maybe Obama would put it out, you know, at such a thing. Who knows? But I'm just trying to bring out to you that something that we take for granted isn't so easily taken for granted. And the flip side of this, it happened here in Yeshiva this year that some, you know, in a Seres Yimei Tshuva, in the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, so Shulchan Aruch says that you're not supposed to eat, that even though the whole year you eat pas palter, but during Seres Yimei Tshuva you should be stricter. A person should act on a higher level during that time and should only eat bishul Yisrael, pas Yisrael, should only eat bread baked by a Jew. So somebody had a yahrzeit, whatever it was, somebody sent over here to the Yeshiva several boxes of Krispy Kreme donuts. So the question is, can you eat that during the Seres Yimei Tshuva? Nobody doubts the kashrus, but again, if it's pas, so then it's not pas Yisrael. So here, you know, so what are you going to say here? So here you'll say, oh, it's no problem, it's bishul. Okay, that's what some people said, that is, it should be treated as bishul, and therefore it's not a problem. But if you go down that road, this is where you're headed. In other words, if you're walking down the bishul road, this is what's waiting for you at the end, right? In other words, someone's standing with a boxing glove that says, excuse me, sir, who told you this is not prestigious? Okay, and if it is prestigious, you can't eat it. And it makes no difference how many mashkichim the ORB had there unless somebody cooked it. Unless a Jew, you know, Ashkenazim turned on the fire for Sfarim, that wouldn't be good enough. But the fact of the matter is, that's what it would take. Whereas if you consider it pas, then you have a much easier walk. The prevailing custom, from what I've seen, is that it is treated as bishul, but we rely on this leniency. We rely on this leniency that it's not all shulchan malachim. So you have to watch. Next time you see a state dinner, sometimes you get these magazines that have, you know, pictures of elegant cooking magazines. And here it was put out by the King of Sweden for the... if you see donuts in that picture, say goodbye to Dunkin' Donuts and goodbye to Krispy Kreme, because that's it. There's no Hefter anymore. Okay, so this is...
Cakes are the same thing?
I'm sorry?
Cakes?
No, cake is surely pas. Cake is in the classification of bread. And if it's considered bread, you're safe. Because bread, that is different criteria. Yeah.
What about all the other stuff that they have at Dunkin' Donuts? There's a lot of other cooked food besides...
So you have to speak to... I guess they assume that none of those things I guess none of those things are all shulchan lachem either. I never thought about that. I live in this neighborhood, so I'm a Krispy Kreme guy, generally speaking. Krispy Kreme only sells donuts. Okay, so that's the issue. Yeah.
On all of these commercially prepared foods, however they're classified, how do they deal with the issue of things being possibly cooked on Shabbos if the factory's open on Shabbos?
So if a guy cooks it on Shabbos, it's not a problem unless he made it for you specifically. But in a commercial place, that's not the case. They made it for everybody. Like Dunkin' Donuts, you can go last night. You could have gone to Krispy Kreme. For sure, the donuts right after Avdol, you could have gone right in the car, and yes, I'm going to make Avdol and a cup of coffee, right? Which technically you're allowed to do, right? So you know that those donuts were for sure baked on Shabbos. That's not a problem. They weren't made for you. It's the only problem was made for a Jew. Okay, yeah. Go ahead, last question. Yes.
I learned from Shimshin and Shir, recommending Pas Halter, if it's beyond a certain shear,
No, no, no. That's possible. The kistin, you're confusing.
But if you eat a whole,
if you ate a tremendous amount of cake, you would have to say how much.
You have to wash.
Well, so according to this, you would not. That's a good point.
Just the
right?
Shear.
Huh?
Just the shear.
Right. That's what the Shulchan said. Nagul lahakel. That's exactly what he was referring to. That you would not have to say Berachas HaMazon on this. But if you ate cake, you would. Anyway, there you have it, Rabbi Sai. So, okay, enjoy the donuts, and just beware if things change further in the future.